foulness stenches in the air. The funk of 40,000 years and grisly ghouls from every tomb are closing in to seal your doom. And though you fight to stay alive, your body starts to shiver. For no mere mortal can resist the evil of the thriller.
Welcome to Thriller with Car Gonzalez. Broadcasting from Austin, Texas. Via SoundCloud and supported by listeners like you. Today is Halloween, and we are having our second annual Cryptoween special.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another exciting episode of Thriller Podcast. Today is October 31st. Happy Cryptoween. That's right. This is our second annual Cryptoween special. We have it every year. And today we're talking the tale of the creature from Jekyll Island. That's right. I think it's a very interesting tale. I think you're going to find a lot of benefit of knowing how fiat currency of what we know it today, how it came to be. Yeah, it's one of the most fascinating books, you know, that I've ever read. It's very eye-opening. It really helps you understand what's going on with our economy, the Fed, and the role of governments in monetary policy. It's a good investment, I would say, to read this book and to understand how the world really works. And some people actually look at this as a conspiracy theory. I tend to look at it as it presented to me. And I've done enough research to where I can kind of take here and there and see the bigger picture, right? I think with anything, you want to make sure you understand where the information is coming from. At the end of the day, it's a great tale and it's a great story, and it's very fitting for Cryptoween, Bitcoin on its 10th anniversary today by becoming a worldwide currency for the future. So with that, let's listen to G. Edward Griffin as he talks about Creature from Jekyll Island.
How can you summarize something like the Federal Reserve System into a short summary? And it's not too easy. You know, you just start with the basics. And you can usually condense the most complex ideas down to just a few words. And I could say, for instance, that the Federal Reserve System is a scam, and I'm through. I'm done. I've delivered my speech. Any questions, you know? Well, that's not quite good enough for most people. Well, why is it a scam? Well, it's a scam because it pretends to be something that it is not. And it's pretending to be a government agency that was formed for the best interest of the American people. It's pretending to be an agency responsive to the will of the people that is dedicated to benefiting the society and the economy, to controlling inflation, to providing jobs, and to stabilize the currency, and do all these good things for the economy for the American people, but it is not. It doesn't do those things. It's not what it really is formed to do. So I'm here to tell you in as few words as possible that the Federal Reserve System is not a government agency, as many of you already know. It looks like one. It's carefully crafted to look like one, but in reality, it is nothing but a cartel. It's no different than an oil cartel or a banana cartel. It just happens to be a banking cartel. And that means it is comprised of the big banks of the United States with strong influence from their partners around the world. And they decided back in 1910, when legislation was being talked about, to control banking, to bring banking under control to benefit the American people, because there was a lot of concern in those days among the people and congressmen that the Wall Street banks were out of control. And they knew that it was just too much power over the monetary system and interest rates and who got the best deals in business and the flow of money and all of that sort of thing. And so there was a pressure from the grassroots to draft some legislation that was going to regulate the banks for the benefit of the people for a change. So basically what happened is the banks themselves certainly knew that this was afoot, And they wisely decided that why should they sit around and wait for the Congress and their foes to draft legislation that really would control the banks? Why would they be silly enough to let that happen when they themselves could take the lead and draft their own legislation and make it appear as though it was something that was going to regulate the banks on behalf of the people? And that is exactly what happened. The Federal Reserve System was created under conditions of great secrecy on an island, Jekyll Island, off the coast of Georgia. And it was drafted by six people that were representatives of the big, powerful banking interests. You know, the Rockefellers, primarily the Rockefellers, and J.P. Morgan, those banking interests. They dominated the American economy. They and their representatives of Kuhn Loeb and Company, which touched bases across the seas. The people that went to Jekyll Island, there were only six of them, represented, and this was an account that was published in the New York papers back in 1910, they represented the wealth that they personally held or held through the institutions which they controlled. And I'm glad you're all sitting down for this one. Approximately one-fourth of the wealth of the entire world. Now, if that isn't a concentration of economic power, I don't know what you would call it. And these are the guys who were the big banking trust, you know, the money trust, as it was called in the newspapers at that time. People were concerned about breaking the grip of the money trust. This was the money trust. And so they went to Jekyll Island so they would be out of view. They traveled, you know, privately on this railroad train, this railroad car, privately owned by Senator Nelson Aldrich. And they traveled two nights and a day, and they went to Jekyll Island in Georgia. And for a whole week, they sat around a table there, and they drafted what became the Federal Reserve Act. What they really wrote, of course, was a cartel agreement. It was, when you read it with that eye, you understand that what they wrote was a cartel agreement, which meant they regulated themselves to make sure that competition between them would not get out of hand, so that they could control prices and they could divide up markets, and what all cartels always do. They created a shared monopoly, in other words. And then they took it to Washington, and mentally, you might imagine, they took this big eraser and they erased from the top of the page the heading that said cartel agreement. Didn't want that on it. And then they carefully wrote in Federal Reserve Act. Now it's the same document, same substance, and they gave it to Congress and they talked about how great it was going to be for the American people. And they passed it into law. And that means that you and I now have to obey the terms of a private cartel agreement or we go to prison because it's law. And that explains everything. Once you understand what happened on Jekyll Island back in 1910, and then the 3 years that followed as this plan evolved and finally was passed into law in 1913 in the Christmas session when everybody was going home. It was passed into law, and everybody thought it was a great American institution because at last we were going to control those big, bad banks. And just the opposite was the case.
The central banking system and Bitcoin are two different and inherently conflicting ways of creating, managing, and processing money. When Nakamoto mined the Genesis block, he put on there the Times 3rd of January 2009 Chancellor on the brink of second bailout for banks. He was the only person in the world who used Bitcoins until he made the first Bitcoin transaction with Hal Findlay. Before the Fed's creation, no central banking system in the United States lasted for more than 25 years. As Bitcoin grows, it competes and it conflicts more and more with the central banking system. Because at the end of the day, both systems fight for limited users and value. Cryptocurrency experts frequently say that Bitcoin and the blockchain may be as disruptive as the internet was in the 90s, but it may be more. the internet was more innovative than disruptive and created more companies than it killed. It was a whole new thing in unexplored space that threatened private, apolitical companies, while Bitcoin replaces a pre-established thing. It occupies the space that threatens quasi-public political institutions. There is no bailout for the central banks. Bitcoin feeds on the Fed itself. Given this, if Bitcoin keeps growing as conceptualized and coded by Satoshi Nakamoto and keeps consuming banks' market share, they may retaliate. Nothing wants to die in the jungle. But can they?
The Federal Reserve System is running the show. In other words, the banks are running the show. And the congressmen are like little puppets on strings, and they vote yes or no. They don't care. It's not their money. It's all created out of nothing by the Federal Reserve. It's been Federal Reserve Act, I should say, authorized the banks to create money out of nothing and put down the formulas that would be required by law to do it. So it's all unfolding exactly as it was planned back in 1910. And when you see Congress voting for $1 billion here and $1 billion there to send to the banks, all they're doing is really authorizing a formal authorization of the banks to do what they were going to do anyway, what they wanted to do, and that is to create money out of nothing and then lend it to the federal government and then give it to the banks, or lend it to the banks, or some shenanigan, they get it to the banks in some way. So it all goes to the banks. So we have a system of the banks, for the banks, and by the banks. And people say, what is going on? Because they really think that the Federal Reserve is a government agency, and it doesn't make sense that way. And of course it doesn't make sense, because that's not the way it is. Once you understand that the Federal Reserve is a banking cartel, then everything is cleared up. Of course the banks are the only ones that come out of this economic mess in the black, because it's all rigged for them. And the bill is always passed on to the taxpayer or the consumer, because part of it is paid for by taxes, but the larger part of it is paid by inflation, the hidden tax called inflation. Because when banks are able to create billions and billions of dollars literally out of nothing and push it into the economy by going through the appearance of loaning it to the government or loaning it to corporations and that kind of thing, it inflates the money supply at a much faster rate than the quantity of goods and services is going into the society. So when the goods and services goes up at this rate and the money supply goes up at this rate, what happens? Well, the value of the purchasing power of the units and the money supply become less and less and less, because they're always measured against the total supply of goods and services. So you and I and everybody else, we pay for all of this through inflation. And believe me, we haven't seen the inflation yet that was created, because most of it so far was shipped overseas, because the world still is using American dollars, because as bad as American dollars are and as worthless as they are, they're stronger than any other currency, or most of them anyway. And so there are a lot of countries around the world, for whatever reason, and we won't go into here, but there are good reasons for countries to want to still use American dollars, because their own currencies are even worse. By far worse. So they cannot conduct significant financial transactions in their own local currencies. They must use American dollars. And so we've been able to get these nations around the world, these poor people around the world, they're still hungry for our dollars, because that's what they're using in their own currency, in their own countries. And so we've been able to, and there's this magic phrase, we've been able to export our inflation. That's what that means. We're exporting the inflationary effect is hitting the other parts of the world, but not us for now. But sooner or later, all that money that's out there, American dollars, especially when we come to the point where people recognize that the American dollar is going by the wayside also, and they no longer are wanting or able even to use American dollars in place of their currency. If our competitor nations around the world come up with other currencies that are more attractive than the American dollar. All of these forces are at work at present. Then all of a sudden, these dollars, these so-called euro dollars that are all over the world knee-deep, they'll come back to the United States because people in those countries will say, well, these things, these American dollars are even becoming worthless now. So let's send them back to the United States quickly while we can still buy something in America. And they'll all start coming back and they'll buy all of our products. It'll seem like a wonderful thing, but all of a sudden inflation goes rampant and they'll buy everything we have. You know, we'll buy our automobiles, our real estate, our politicians, anything that's for sale. And we wind up, now we're this deep in American dollars, and you think about inflation, you think it's bad now. When all those euro dollars come back to the U.S., we won't be able to buy anything with them. That's the day of reckoning, and that's where all of this will end if we don't put an end to the system real soon.
And that's where Bitcoin comes in. Bitcoin is the money without the state. It is a banking without banks. It's a wire transfer without wire transfer services. It destroys everything. It ends their world forever. The function of money is what Bitcoin is replacing, and because the Federal Reserve and the other central banks have the entire force of government behind them, this will not be like internet versus internet. There is no place in the Bitcoin world for the Federal Reserve. Bitcoin was designed to destroy it. This is the real reason these financial institutions are testing their networks, are trying to get in, trying to stop the inevitable. Bitcoin's code also protects because it's decentralized. It doesn't have synchronized marketers, lawyers, and lobbyists. Like a bank, it struggles to reach consensus and act, and can't issue press releases or send people to Capitol Hill. But it has a million nodes of light. It's everywhere and nowhere. Where do banks attack? Who do they sue, legislate, and outspend? If Bitcoin was a centralized company, the market could have already killed it. But it's not. So the org has to fight the creature for the first time in 104 years without its traditional weapons. It has to kill. This decentralized diffused attack surface is part of Bitcoin's beauty and Nakamoto's genius. Banks, however, can still target exchanges, miners, and tax dodgers. They can also poison people not yet using crypto, because Bitcoin has a PR problem that may get worse. Numerous people born into the banking system think the Matrix is normal and still think Bitcoin is a Ponzi scheme to buy drugs. And some, crypto isn't an esoteric sidechain anymore. It's not just for techie geeks trading magic playing cards. It's an asset class with market share and the momentum that threatens big banks, big money, and big power. The Iron Bank is a fat org, but it's got the high ground and motive means to fight. So the Jekyll Island war may intensify, and the Jekylline may be violent, but it is a war for the creation and control of money itself. And with that, let's get on to the end of the show.
You gotta pay. touch me.
You know, interesting enough, as I was doing research for this episode, I kept running into this thing called a Black Swan event. Definitely sounds like a topic that I will definitely have to cover in a later episode, but in a nutshell, it is a meteor strike or a volcanic eruption that disrupts everything equally. Can't be localized, and one market's Black Swan may be another market's Golden Goose. Pretty interesting stuff, and I hope to share it in a future episode. But remember, buy Bitcoin, save the world. Happy Halloween.
This is the end of the show. You have been listening to Thriller Podcast with Carr Gonzalez. Remember, Thriller Podcast is not financial advice. Everything Carr said likely won't come true. It is up to you. Now go do your own research. Listen to other dudes that start their name with crypto and not Carr. And remember, buy Bitcoin and save the world. One Satoshi at a time.